In the early morning hours of February 10th, 2009, Ron Cummings returned to his home in Satsuma, Florida after work and learned that his 5-year-old daughter, Haley, was missing. The side door was propped open with a dirty cinder block he had never seen before, and the babysitter told him she had no idea what happened. A massive search for Haley began, but there was no sign of her anywhere. More than 17 years later, and after multiple conflicting stories, Haley's disappearance remains unsolved, but detectives and the community continue to search for her. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. All right, Haley Cummings, just a warning, this case will enrage you. I think from what I've seen over the past couple years, that is a common trend whenever we cover cases involving children, especially when whatever occurred is preventable. And there's a strong belief that the people that I'm discussing are also involved with whatever happened to her. So that's the case tonight. I'm going to be very transparent about it here. I don't pull punches. I'm always cautious and litigious about what I say. And I also want to be respectful to everybody involved because I know the significance of me coming on here and inferring that someone may be involved in a crime. But when I feel strongly enough about it, you guys know at this point, I have no problem doing so. So I'm going to start this episode off by telling you that some of the people I'm going to talk about tonight, I do think are directly involved with Haley's disappearance. We do have a lot to cover. There's a lot of twists and turns in this story. I don't want to waste any more time. So let's dive into this week's case. Haley Ann Cummings was born on August 17th, 2003 to parents Ron and Crystal. Family members described her as a happy, loving child who always seemed to be smiling. When her younger brother Ronald Jr. was born, Haley quickly took on the role of big sister. She loved helping care for him, and relatives began calling her Little Mama, a nickname that stuck because she was always watching over him and trying to help. Around the time that Ronald Jr. was born, Ron and Crystal separated. Ron was awarded full custody of the children, and he moved with them to Satsuma, Florida, a small town halfway between Jacksonville and Orlando. They lived in the Hermit's Cove neighborhood, located along the St. John's River, and their home was at the end of Green Lane. In the fall of 2008, 5-year-old Haley started school at Browning Pierce Elementary School. The Florida Times Union reported that sometime after the school year began, 25-year-old Ron met 17-year-old Misty Croslin. Now, just to be fully transparent here, Misty did not have the best home life. She hadn't attended school since the 7th grade, and she was known to use drugs. But I also want to point out that Ron was known to use drugs as well. Soon after meeting, Misty began babysitting Haley and Ronald Jr., and eventually she and Ron started dating. And I put dating in air quotes because there are some issues there we'll talk about. And they only dated for a short period of time before Misty moved into the home with them. So why do I put dating in air quotes? It's the obvious reasons. Misty is 17 years old and Ron is a grown man. He's 25. And not to get too far ahead here, but eventually Ron and Misty are going to get married. And when I explain the circumstances that occur before their marriage, your mind's going to be blown. It's absurd. But that's a different story that we'll talk about later in this episode. However, just to put it bluntly, you have a grown man, you have a minor. Yes, technically it's legal. He got permission from the parents, but it doesn't mean it's ethical. So I wanted to point that out there because, you know, I do cringe a little bit when I refer to them as dating, but that's the reality of the situation. So Misty and Ron are together. They're living under the same roof with the children. And on the weekend of February 7th and 8th, 2009, Misty was supposed to watch the children while Ron worked the second shift, but those plans changed. Before the weekend began, Ron and Misty got into a huge argument, and Misty left the house and spent the weekend away in what was described as a drug binge. Because of that, Ron asked his grandmother to watch the children instead. So the weekend passes by, and on the afternoon of February 9th, Misty finally returns home, and she tells Ron that she would stay the night with the kids while he went to work. So Ron left for his shift, believing that his children would be cared for. He did not know that that would be the last time he would ever see Haley. At around 3:25 a.m. on what was now February 10th, Ron arrived home. When he walked inside, he found Misty frantic. She told him that she couldn't find Haley. Ron immediately began searching the home, and as he moved through the house, he noticed something unusual at the door of the laundry room. The storm door was propped open with a dirt-covered cinder block that Ron had never seen before. The entry door was also slightly open as well. In front of the doorway sat a basket of laundry, and that basket of laundry is important, and we're going to talk about it in a few minutes. Now, I do want to point out that there's going to be multiple times where I refer to this door as the back door, but in reality, it's the side door. The reason I'm calling it the back door is because there are multiple accounts, not only by the people I'm talking about in the story, but also by media outlets and law enforcement, where occasionally they refer to it as the back door. So I'm doing the same, but I want to be perfectly clear here. It's the side door, although I don't know if the location of the door matters in this particular story. I still want to be accurate and make sure that if you guys go do your own research, you're not confused when you see that the door in question is actually on the side of the house. Speaking of the outside of the house, about halfway down a ramp leading from the front door, Ron found Haley's blanket, and he immediately became concerned for the obvious reasons, right? Now you have clear evidence that at minimum, Haley's belongings were removed from the house. And the fact that they can't find Haley, you have to assume that at least at some point, she was with that possession, that blanket. In addition to that, Ron knew that Haley was afraid of the dark, and he did not believe that she would have gone outside willingly. So now you have circumstances piling up. You have the cinder block propping open the door. You have Haley's blanket being found halfway down the ramp, coupled with the personality that he's dealing with, knowing Haley as her father. This is not good. Common sense here. There's a problem. There's a major issue here, and law enforcement needs to get involved. So at 3:27 a.m., Misty called 911, and she told the dispatcher, quote, "I just woke up and our back door was wide open and I can't find my daughter." While Misty was speaking with the dispatcher, Ron continued searching the home. And in the 911 recording, you could hear him in the background calling out to Haley. And I think this is important. And we're going to talk about theories at the end of the episode like we always do. But when we're considering the possibility that somehow Ron is involved with whatever happened to Haley, I think this is a variable you have to consider. Yes, it could just mean that it was planned this way, that it was intentional for the 911 recording to pick him up calling out to his daughter, or it's exactly what happened. You have a father who's distraught, trying to find his daughter, not realizing maybe that Misty was on the call, and what you hear in the background is genuine. Ultimately, that's up to you to decide. So after the 911 call was placed, Putnam County deputies arrived at approximately 3:40 a.m., and they searched the home, but they were also unsuccessful in locating Haley. The Florida Times Union reported that detectives asked Misty to tell them what had happened. She told them that she put the children to bed at approximately 8:15 p.m., and according to Misty, both children were placed in the king-size bed located in the primary bedroom. At the time, she said Haley had been wearing a Hannah Montana t-shirt. After putting the children to bed, Misty stayed up watching movies and cleaning. She later joined the children in bed sometime after 10 p.m. Now, it is important to note that Misty told the detectives that the back door was closed and locked when she went to bed. She also said that all the lights in the home were off and that she had never left the house. She goes on to say that she woke up around 3 a.m. to get a drink of water, and when she walked into the kitchen, she noticed that the screen door was propped open with a cinder block. She immediately went back to the bedroom, and that's when she realized that Haley was no longer in the bed. So she searched the house for her, looking, quote, under beds, but couldn't find her. And I emphasize the statement of under beds for a reason. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but it's not the only thing she said that raised an eyebrow. Officers also asked why she waited to call 911 until Ron got home. And according to HLN, Missy said she spent time searching for Haley and also taking a shower. Both statements immediately raised red flags. Officers noted that all of the beds in the home sat directly on the floor, making it unlikely someone could hide underneath them. They also questioned why she would take a shower after finding out that Haley was missing. So you can see right from the get-go, there were issues with Misty's statements, and this was just what she had said to the first responding officers. When detectives arrived, they also found issues with Misty's account of what had happened, and we're going to talk about it right after the break. This episode is brought to you by Pocket Hose, the world's number one expandable hose. Let me tell you something. If you've ever dealt with one of those old school hoses, you know exactly how annoying they can be. They kink, they twist, and somehow they always fight you right at the spigot. And so you're sitting there wrestling with the thing just to water a couple flowers. And that's why the Pocket Hose Copperhead is such a game changer. Let me tell you, I always try the products before I endorse them, and I was a little skeptical. So I hooked this thing up. I turned my water back on after the snowstorms. I wanted to give it a try, and it is. It's really pocket size. You turn it on, the water comes rushing through it. There's strong pressure, expanded right out, no issues. And, you know, I just did a couple squirts in the yard, and I'm thinking, okay, here's the real test. Is it going to coil back up? Is it going to do what it says it does? Turn the water off. This thing shrunk right back down to pocket size. Absolutely awesome. Definitely was impressed by it. The only problem is I need more of them now because I have multiple spigots, and the old hose that I had hooked up to it, yeah, it's going in the trash. And one of the first things that I noticed about the pocket pivot is that it swivels 360 degrees, so you're not dealing with that constant twisting or loss of water pressure. You can actually just go out there, turn the water on, and get the job done. And when you're finished, like I said, it shrinks right back down to pocket size, hence the name. So no winding, no dragging a heavy hose across the yard, damaging your grass. It's lightweight, it's durable, and it's anti-burst and rust-proof, which is why it's backed with a 10-year warranty. As you can tell, I love the Pocket Hose. I think you will as well. And for a limited time, my listeners and viewers can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. All you have to do is text DETECTIVE to 64000. That's DETECTIVE to 64000 for two free gifts with your purchase. One more time, text DETECTIVE to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. All right, we're back from break. And I was talking about how when officers initially responded, the statements that Misty was providing were not great. They just didn't make sense. It wasn't necessarily anything that was completely wrong with it, but just they were very inconsistent with what they had at the crime scene. For example, like I said, her saying she looked under the beds. Now, you could interpret that as she felt like maybe Haley might have squeezed herself under the mattresses and was like hiding under there on purpose. But you would think that you would have seen some type of movement or at least a lift in the mattress to notice, hey, something's underneath that. So that was odd. But even more so, the shower. We didn't talk about it much before I took the break, but it's absurd. It's absurd to think that anyone, after losing a child, would say, hey, you know what? My 5-year-old's missing, or the 5-year-old of the guy that I'm dating is missing. I was the last person with her. This is a major issue. Maybe I should find her before I take the shower. So that was just the minimal stuff right off the rip. And then detectives came in and they started interviewing her, and there was even more inconsistency. So to start, first of all, there was no signs of forced entry anywhere in the home. And Misty insisted that the door had been locked before she went to bed. So how did they get in? I would have to imagine there wasn't many people who had a key to the home. Ron, maybe the grandmother, but the list is short. And so how does this person get inside without leaving any signs of entry? Damn near impossible. There would have been a broken window. There would have been a broken lock, something to show, hey, this was the point of entry, and yet we have nothing. Furthermore, detectives could not explain how someone could prop open an aluminum door, which would have been loud, and abduct a child sleeping in bed next to Misty without her waking up. And I completely agree. aluminum storm doors, anybody who has them, they're kind of tinny. You could be quiet about it, but you're going to be rummaging around the building and you're going to make some noise. This wasn't a huge place, so you would expect Misty to hear something. And on top of that, they supposedly go into the master bedroom. They wake Haley up, get her out of there without her making a single noise. Again, this is a 5-year-old little girl. More than likely, she would have said something even if she knew the person. And yet, we're to believe that all of this happened and Misty was sound asleep. I'm not buying it. There were also some additional inconsistencies with the door itself. Now, remember what I said earlier, this door, it has been described in some reports, some accounts as being the back door, but technically it was the side door. And as I mentioned before, there was that basket of laundry sitting in front of the doorway that had not been disturbed. And resting on top of that pile of laundry was the Hannah Montana t-shirt that Misty said Haley was wearing when she went to bed. So at this point, for investigators, nothing was adding up. Law enforcement agencies across the area began deploying resources to search for Haley. Deputies set up perimeters around the neighborhood while search teams moved through the surrounding woods and the nearby properties. Bloodhounds were brought in, along with helicopters to search from the air, and the dogs eventually tracked a scent from the house toward the nearby St. John's River. And because of that, boats were deployed to search the water, but they didn't find anything. Meanwhile, detectives processed the house and the surrounding property. And so you have this massive search going on throughout the community and multiple resources are being deployed. No expenses being spared. They're trying to find Haley as fast as possible. Meanwhile, detectives are still at the house processing the scene and the surrounding property. Now, if you remember, there was a cinder block that Ron said he had never seen before. HLN reported that detectives figured out the block came from the home's water tank. The block had been partially buried near the tank, and detectives could see the impression in the ground where it had previously been. And this is something that you see a lot with houses that run on propane as well. I have it at my old house where to level out the propane tank, because of the ground sinking, you put the cinder blocks on all three corners to make sure it's level. And as that kind of sinks into the ground, it's very heavy, the cinder blocks will keep it propped up and off the ground. So this is something to me, I'd have to know how heavy the water tank was. Like, was it full? Because I would imagine it would be extremely heavy. And depending on how deep that cinder block was underneath the water tank, I would imagine that it would have been very difficult to remove, especially for just one woman by herself. Now, if it was just off the edge where you could kind of just pull it out, no problem. But if it was deep, based on the impression, I would imagine that it would take. Now, if it was deep under the water tank, I would imagine if it was heavy, that it would take at least two people to remove that cinder block. One person kind of propping the tank up while the other person removes the cinder block, which, by the way, isn't light either. It's not like extremely heavy, but for most people, it's going to take at least two hands. And I do want to mention about the cinder block, because I know there's a lot of you in your cars right now or watching on YouTube and you're screaming at your screen saying, but what about the cinder block? Did they process it for DNA? Yes, they did attempt to collect DNA from the cinder block and they did recover a small amount. But unfortunately, it wasn't enough to identify a contributor. Now, back inside the home, detectives noted there were no clear signs of foul play or evidence that cleaning supplies had been used. They did locate a small smear of Haley's blood on the side of the mattress, but they could not determine when the blood had been left there. So you got kids in the house. There's a strong possibility that that blood was from a previous incident, or at least that's what I'm hoping, because if she's already injured before she leaves the home, that's not a good sign. They also collected material from the bathroom drains, and a small amount of blood was recovered, but it could not be matched to anyone that they had already identified. And this is a process that a lot of investigators miss. So props to the law enforcement agency here for going that extra step. I see a lot of cases where the main crime scene is the house, and there's a potential that it was staged or cleaned up prior to law enforcement's arrival. And as a detective, you have to think about that process. You're going to buy some cleaning agents. You're going to wipe everything down. You're going to throw away anything like rags or paper towels into a bag. That bag is going to be more than likely disposed of in a nearby dumpster, not at the main house. But one thing they're not able to clean up are the drains, right? If they wash anything off, rags, paper towels, their hands, and they do it in one of the sinks, there's really no way to completely sterilize those drains. You could throw some bleach down it. That may help, but a lot of criminals miss that as well. So as an investigator, you got to be thinking about those little forks in the road where the criminal may have made a misstep. And this would be one of them. So I'm glad they did this. I bring this up because although it didn't pay off here, a lot of the cases that we talk about in the future, if the crime scene is the house itself and there's a potential that it was a cover-up, this is something that you guys are going to think about going forward. So unfortunately, these first initial steps didn't pay off. Nothing was panning out, no clear signs of where Haley was, but the search continued and detectives also interviewed the adults in Haley's life. Ron told detectives he had no idea what happened to his daughter. He had been at work when Haley disappeared, and detectives were able to verify his story, and Ron was ruled out as a suspect. You know how I feel about this, guys. I think it's safe to say that he was not the primary person who had taken Haley or had done whatever was done to Haley. That's fair. Physical impossibility for him to be in two places at once. But how do we rule him out completely as a suspect? Isn't there a possibility that he could have been a contributor, maybe a co-conspirator? To me, that's still on the table. Even after everything I've gone through, I don't have anything to say with 100% certainty that he doesn't know what happened to Haley. Now, this is not something that I take lightly. I am in no way, shape, or form suggesting that Ron is somehow involved with what happened to Haley. I'm simply saying to you guys that as an objective investigator, I can only call it as I see it. And the fact remains, he cannot be definitively ruled out as a suspect unless we find out what happened to Haley. That's the bottom line. So if Ron sees this, I mean no disrespect. I want what you want. I want to find your daughter. And I have to consider all possibilities, including you being involved. Haley's mother, Crystal, was also cleared. Authorities confirmed that she had been in a different county at the time when Haley went missing. Same thing here. Okay, you confirmed she was in another location. That's fine. She physically can't be in two places at once. We've already established that. But does that mean that she couldn't have hired someone or enlisted someone's help to carry out the abduction? Was she scorned by the fact that she hadn't seen her children and that Ron had gotten full custody? Sounds like a potential motive to me. But again, Crystal, if you're listening or watching this episode, I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm pointing out the fact that we should all want the same thing, and that's to find the person or people responsible for what happened to Haley. And as far as I'm concerned, everyone is still a possibility here. I haven't seen anything to say, oh yeah, no way this person could be involved whatsoever. That would be an opinion. Doesn't make it a fact. But moving on from Crystal and Ron for a moment, and this is going to come as no shock to any of you, investigators were unable to corroborate Misty's account of what happened that night. There was no proof that she had been home all night like she was claiming. And by 9:30 a.m., 6 hours had passed since Haley was reported missing, and detectives still had no idea what happened to her. And because of this uncertainty, detectives treated the case as both a possible abduction and a wandering child case. An Amber Alert was issued, and the FBI was brought in to assist with the investigation. Unfortunately, by the end of that day, there was no sign of Haley anywhere. There was no indication Haley had left the home on her own, so they switched gears and focused entirely on the abduction theory. And this is the right move. I have no problem with doing a parallel investigation. All possibilities are still on the table. As much as it may look like an abduction, you want to start with the basic stuff first. There's also a possibility that Misty didn't lock the door and that she didn't turn off the lights and that 5-year-old Haley wandered outside on her own. Highly unlikely, but would it be the first time something like that happened where we found the child near the woods or in the backyard playing or something of that nature? So of course, you want to rule that out first, and it seems like they did that relatively quickly, but I like that they didn't start with that and then transition to an abduction because that ramps up the severity of the investigation. So instead, they did it simultaneously, and that is the right approach. So search efforts continued throughout Putnam County, and according to the Associated Press, detectives also continued interviewing family members. Ron's grandmother told detectives that she had stopped by the home on the evening of the 9th while Ron was at work. She said she had arrived at approximately 7:30 p.m. to drop off some clothing the children had left at her house. And when she got there, Misty, Haley, and Ronald Jr. were sitting on the porch eating. And according to her, everything seemed fine. Unfortunately, this would be the last time that she saw Haley as well. Now, as far as I can tell from everything that I've researched, that was the last confirmed sighting of Haley that night, and what happened after Ron's grandmother left remains unclear. And to this day, Misty has never been able to provide proof of what she did during those hours. And with every police interview that she did, her account of what happened that night would evolve. During her third interview, Misty said that when she put Haley to bed, she actually placed her on a small mattress on the floor just a few feet from the king-size bed. Why would she do that? Well, it's what I said earlier. If Haley was right in bed next to her, it's highly unlikely that she wouldn't have heard or felt someone come in and take Haley. So what does she have to do? She has to change her story to make it fit a little bit more. Well, if Haley's not in the bed and she's on a mattress on the floor, it's more reasonable to assume that someone could have came in, grabbed Haley, and got out of there before Misty figured out what was going on. Having her in the bed with her discredits her original story. So you see what's going on here? And by the way, she was interviewed almost instantaneously. So how do you not remember where Haley was when you put her to bed? Was it in the king-size bed or was it on the floor? This is not science. This is not complicated. You should be able to recite what happened without even thinking about it. I brought the kids into the bed. I went and did my thing. I came back a couple hours later. I got into bed with them. Super simple. The fact that the story keeps changing suggests a high degree of certainty that there's some level of deception here. And you would think that that would be the worst of it, right? She just can't remember if Haley was in the king-size bed or on a mattress on the floor. But that's not it. On February 12th, Misty offered yet another version of the events for that evening. But this time, it was to the media outlet News 4 Jax. Misty said she had woken up during the night to use the bathroom, but before she made it, she noticed the kitchen light was on. Misty said that she had turned all the lights off before going to bed, so she believed someone had turned them on. She walked into the kitchen, and that's when she saw the back door was open. And again, that's the side door. And at this point, I think you guys are all thinking what I'm thinking. Normally, I would say, oh, you know, during these interview processes, the detectives are probably going through their system and coming to the conclusion that this doesn't make sense. No, listen, we're all human beings. Most of us have common sense. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. You have this woman who's saying she was in the house. There was a small window of time before going to bed, and her stories are just not lining up. And she's now using the media to spread this information. Why would she do that? If her number one obligation here is to find Haley, why wouldn't she go to law enforcement with that information? She goes to the media because she wants to try and control the narrative. She's more concerned about public perception than finding Haley. So search efforts continued until February 17th, when authorities announced that they were scaling back their ground search to focus on investigating tips, many of which mentioned Misty. Multiple tipsters said that she had not been home on the night of Haley's disappearance, despite her statements to police. In fact, they stated that she and Haley had been at a party in Palatka. One tipster went even further, claiming that Haley had died from a drug overdose at the party and her body had been put into the L Pond in southern Putnam County. So because of this tip, detectives followed up on it and they drained the entire pond, but nothing was found. Still, law enforcement was very open with the public about their suspicions of Misty, and they told the media that she had been the last known person to see Haley, and her ever-changing statements continued to raise concerns. One detective said that he had spent many hours interviewing her, and she had never once told him the same story. He also described her initial statements as appearing, quote, somewhat rehearsed. Detectives also brought up their issues with the home, describing it as possibly staged. Despite all of this, the police never officially named Misty as a suspect in Haley's disappearance. And I'm here to tell you that that means absolutely nothing. They clearly felt that she was a suspect. Even though they didn't publicly come out and say it, they're kind of saying it without saying it, right? They're coming out to the media saying that they're very suspicious of this particular person. No, they're not putting the suspect label on it. That may be a strategy just not to scare her too much where she tries to run. But overall, the writing's on the wall. They're looking at Misty as the main person of interest here, and they may not know exactly what happened to Haley, but they believe that Misty does. So I want to switch gears for a minute because I kind of teed this up for you at the beginning of the episode, but this was a crazy turn of events because if you remember, this happened in February and you have all this suspicion surrounding Misty. And if you're Ron, you're thinking, wow, something's going on here and Misty knows more than she's saying. Because again, the investigator's suspicions, it's not a leap, right? It's pretty commonsensical at this point. And you would think that Ron would feel the same way. Not so much. Just over a month later in March, Ron and Misty made headlines again by getting married when she was still 17 years old. Ridiculous for a multitude of reasons. Obviously, him being 25, her still being a minor. But then even more importantly, if Ron is innocent in all of this, there's no way if you have half a brain, you're not thinking at this point, Misty knows more than she's saying. So there's two ways you can go here. You can hold her feet to the fire, confide in her, try to get her to open up to you and say, hey, listen, I'm not going to be upset about it, but I want to know where my daughter is. Or you can go and marry this person who is clearly untrustworthy. I don't know which option to go with. What would you go with? I think if I asked 100 people after giving them this exact scenario, 100 out of 100 people would say, yeah, I might bury this person as opposed to marrying them. And yet, here we are, Ron and Misty getting married a month after Haley disappeared. But here's the best part of this whole story. Just over 6 months later, in October, they got divorced. Shocker, right? Who didn't see that one coming? So you may think that's the end of these twists and turns, right? That's the end of the saga between Ron and Misty. They're going to go their separate ways. Not so fast. Ron and Misty actually stayed in contact, and it wasn't long before detectives received tips claiming they were selling prescription pills, along with Misty's brother, Hank Crosland Jr., who went by Tommy. Detectives investigating Haley's disappearance decided to take advantage of the situation, so they set up an undercover sting operation with the goal of arresting everyone involved and then questioning them about Haley's disappearance. Genius. It's a very common tactic that we use. There's been many times where, as a narcotics detective, there may be a bigger crime like a homicide or armed robbery, and we have a belief that the individuals selling drugs are somehow connected to it. So I'll come in with my team and we put that narcotics operation on top priority with the goal of bringing everyone in from the top down and seeing if anyone will crack. It's a really simple interview, right? You bring them in, you say, hey, we got you dead to rights for these drug charges. However, we don't believe you're directly connected with what happened over here, but we think you know what happened. So tell us what you know and we'll give you a plea deal. And usually the people at the bottom who have a lot to lose but not a lot of involvement, they're going to spill the beans. And that's what they were hoping for here. So overall, I just want to say, even though the results haven't been successful, from what I've gathered and from what I've been told, overall, law enforcement did a pretty damn good job with this case. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but I think you can see from the story that I'm telling you, it's not for lack of effort, and you have to appreciate that. The Orlando Sentinel reported that over the course of the two-month sting, an undercover detective purchased roughly $4,000 worth of oxycodone and hydrocodone from the members of the group. By January of 2010, the sting was over and Misty, Ron, and Tommy were all arrested and charged with multiple trafficking offenses. Ron and Misty faced the most serious charges and were each looking at a mandatory minimum sentence of 25 years in prison. Detectives approached each of the defendants with the same offer. They said if anyone could provide truthful information about what happened to Haley, prosecutors would consider working with them on the drug charges. But at first, no one spoke. Detectives still believed that Misty knew more than she was saying, so they decided to wait her out, and it paid off, because in April, Misty and Tommy went to detectives and said they were willing to talk as long as they got a lesser sentence for the drug charges. Detectives were true to their word, and they agreed to work with them. And we're going to talk about what Misty and Tom had to say right after the break. Ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep, and that's why I switched to Miracle Made Sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric so that you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So if you're a hot sleeper, cold sleeper, it really doesn't matter. These sheets will help keep you in the comfort zone all night long. That's why I love them, and that's why they've been a sponsor of the channel for so long, because honestly, it's easy for me to promote them because I love the product. And thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Made Sheets stay cleaner and fresher up to 3 times longer than regular sheets. That means fewer odors, fewer wash cycles, and way less laundry, and who doesn't love that? And the most important part, and I talk about this all the time, yeah, they have this cool technology, they do all these other things, but they got to be comfortable, because at the end of the day, if you don't like sleeping on them, you're not going to use them. And I'm happy to report they're extremely comfortable. They feel just as good, if not better, than the sheets you'd find in five-star hotels, but without the steep price tag. So they're smooth, they're breathable, and they're insanely comfortable. And they're also great for your skin. I've talked about this before. It's no secret that all that bacteria in your regular sheets, it can clog your pores, it can cause breakouts, none of the things that any of us want. But with Miracle Made's antibacterial design, it helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest by going to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use my promo code DETECTIVE, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free three-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with their 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/detective at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. So before break, I mentioned that Misty and Tommy finally decided to talk to investigators, and they sat down for their interviews, and what they had to say was pretty out there. According to Tommy, on the night Haley disappeared, he and his cousin named Joe went to the Cummings home around midnight. Tommy claimed they were looking for a World War II era machine gun that they had planned to use for deer hunting, but they couldn't find the weapon, so Tommy claimed they decided to take Haley instead. He told detectives that she was screaming as they placed her into a black bag. Tommy said that he and Joe drove around 5 miles to the boat ramp along St. John's River, and by the time they got there, Haley was, quote, limp and quiet. So they tied a concrete block to her with a rope, placed her in the water, and left. Surprisingly, Misty gave detectives a similar account. According to the Florida Times Union, she claimed that she was in bed, hiding under the covers with Haley's younger brother Ronald Jr. while the kidnapping occurred. Misty said she also remembered hearing the sliding door of the van open and close. She also recalled seeing a black bag or something similar placed over Haley, but she did not know what happened to her after that. This is concerning, right? This means that there was a prior conversation with Misty and Tommy before they were arrested on the drug charges. There's no way, or it would be very unlikely, that they could have set up this story after being arrested. And when you really think about it, they're looking for a lesser charge on these drug offenses, and yet they're admitting to essentially a murder. So not what you would think they would say in this. You would expect them to put it on someone else. Essentially what they're saying is, yeah, I went there for a robbery, and when I couldn't find what I was looking for, we transitioned to a child abduction, and it resulted in her death. So maybe not first degree murder, but still a murder. And it's a little confusing to me as far as Misty's involvement. How would she be unaware of what happened if she wasn't directly in on what was going to transpire? On one hand, she's making it seem like she was a victim as well, where they came in and basically just overran the joint, and she had nothing she could do other than just hide under the covers with Ronald Jr. And yet, even though she was under the covers, she still saw the black bag over Haley, and she heard the van doors outside, and she knew to a certain degree what had happened, even if she supposedly didn't know that it was Tommy and Joe. Here's the big problem with all of this. If this really was exactly what happened, and she had no idea who the abductors were, why wouldn't she tell that to Ron? Why wouldn't she tell that to law enforcement? She's a victim here as well. She's also the key witness. She could put them on the right track to potentially find Haley as soon as possible. And yet, according to her initial statements, she got up, she looked around, she took a shower, but had no idea what happened to Haley. You can't even go with the angle of, oh, she was covering for her brother, because according to her, she was under the blankets and didn't know who committed the abduction. So there would be no incentive to lie. At that point, law enforcement's there. She's no longer in danger. Tell them what you know. Help them get Haley back. And yet she doesn't do that. So what do I think of all this? It's concerning. I'm going to be honest with you, because as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, if they're trying to distance themselves from what happened to Haley while also getting a sweet deal on the drug offenses, they're not going to come in and say that we abducted and killed this girl. They're going to give a different story. And yet what they're describing, it's awful. And it doesn't make anybody in the situation look good. It confirms that Tommy and Joe are killers. And Misty, at minimum, is a liar and somewhat responsible for Haley not being found sooner. So I don't know what the incentive here is. I don't know what the angle is, but clearly Misty and Tommy aren't that bright, because this whole story is not going to help them out at all. If you expect detectives and prosecutors to work with killers when the offenses that they're trying to get off on are drug charges, I don't care what they promised. They're willing to work with you, but that doesn't mean they're going to let you go scot-free after you admitting to killing this young girl. It's not going to happen. And this is obviously not what the detectives were hoping for. They were hoping they were going to come in and say, yeah, we gave Haley to someone else. We're going to take you to them. But you got to go where the evidence takes you. And so because Misty and Tommy made these statements, the St. John's River was searched for days, but nothing was found. And this isn't an area that you can drain like a pond. And at one point, detectives actually brought Misty to the river, and they were hoping that she could point out the possible location and provide additional information. And again, this is where I get a little confused, because Misty appeared to try to be separating herself from this. And from what I heard, she had no involvement after they left the home. And yet detectives believed that she would know exactly where Haley was placed in the river, therefore insinuating that she had more involvement than she was letting on. And no surprise to anyone, Misty didn't contribute any information that assisted in finding Haley, but she did start to cry while at the river. And I can promise you, no one there felt bad for her. And furthermore, on the drive back to the jail, she told detectives that she no longer wanted to speak with them. And after that, she refused all further interviews, but she did continue speaking with the media, offering new stories every time. The Florida Times Union reported that Tommy eventually admitted he had made up the story about Joe and the river in hopes of receiving leniency on the drug charges, which, again, not to be a broken record here, makes absolute no sense to me. In what world would you think admitting to abducting and killing a 5-year-old girl would result in leniency on drug charges? Buddy, you're going down for murder. What does it matter what you get on the drug charges? So I'm not understanding the rationale. Either I'm misinterpreting this entire thing, or candidly, Tommy and Misty are morons. And I'm leaning towards the latter. Ultimately, when everything was said and done, Tommy and Misty entered no contest pleas to the drug charges, and Misty was sentenced to 25 years in prison, maximum sentence. Do you think the judge maybe thought about everything else that was going on when considering the sentencing? I think so. I think that's a safe bet. Now, Ron, on the other hand, he accepted a plea agreement. As part of the deal, he agreed to testify for the prosecution in any future proceedings relating to the drug charges or to Haley's disappearance. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison. So, little less of a sentence, same involvement. You can read between the lines here. Misty played with fire. The judge clearly believed there's more than she's saying. And they dropped a hammer on her, rightfully so. They should have dropped the hammer on Ron as well. So all of this transpires, right? A lot of ups and downs in the investigation. And eventually the drug charges had been resolved, right? Everything had been handed out. People were charged and sentenced, and it was over with. But the investigation into Haley's disappearance was still ongoing. Authorities told the media that although they had not yet found Haley, they believed that she was, quote, most likely dead, and her case was being classified as a homicide. Detectives also said they had identified several persons of interest in the investigation, but they didn't name anyone publicly. They would only say that they believed Misty was the key to the case. But after this, there was little movement in the investigation. Let's fast forward to the fall of August 2024. By that time, more than 15 years had passed since Haley disappeared. She would have been 21 that month, and to mark the milestone, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released an age-progressed image showing what Haley might look like at that age. Detectives provided an update as well, stating they continue to classify Haley's disappearance as an unsolved homicide, even though her body has never been found. And unfortunately, that is the last update we have in this case. Haley is still missing, and detectives are still searching for answers, hoping one day they will finally bring her home. All right, let's dive into this perspective. I want to talk about mainly the theories surrounding the evidence and the information that we are aware of. And I'm going to start with the obvious one, being that some of the witnesses reporting Misty and Haley were seen at a party. I don't know how credible those witnesses were, but at this point, I'm just going to assume that there was something there, at least to deem it credible. And if that's the case, it could be exactly what has been told to us. Misty, who clearly had a drug problem, wanted to go out and party. She may have even left Ron Jr. at home alone because he was sleeping. Takes Haley out for a little bit, and while they're there, something happens. Not even necessarily an OD, but there's some type of accident, maybe involving drugs, and something occurs with Haley where she dies. And at that point, everyone there feels some level of culpability, responsibility, and they're all going to go to their grave with this information because they don't want to be arrested for it. And so whoever this person is that came forward, I would like to know where that stands now. Are they sticking by their statements as far as that's what happened, or have they recanted? That is information that law enforcement would have. I do not have, but I'm putting that at the top of the list because it does align with the inconsistencies in Misty's story. None of it makes sense. So she's clearly lying. Let's just put that right out there. The question is why? Where is the truth? Is it somewhere in the middle, or is it a complete deviation from what she's told us? And this would be that deviation. She wasn't home. She was out partying, kind of like someone else we know. Maybe there's a case that I'm thinking of, Casey Anthony, you know? So it could be something like that, where she was out with Haley around some not so good people, and there were drugs on the table or something like that, and Haley got into it, and she died. She didn't get the medical care she needed, and they dumped her body somewhere, and she's yet to be found. That's number one. Doesn't mean it's the most plausible, but I have to put it at the top because supposedly we have an impartial witness stating that's what happened. The next few theories are kind of variants of each other. They are similar as far as the theme, but they involve different players. The first one being mainly Misty, right? She goes out on this drug binge over the weekend, allegedly, and something happens while she's out there. She's using a lot of drugs. Maybe she gets into some debt with some drug dealers and they're going to hurt her. They're going to kill her if she doesn't come up with the money. So she says to them, hey, I don't have the money, but my boyfriend has a nice house. He's got some guns. He's got some World War II era stuff that you could take. And, you know, there's a young girl there as well. Is there anything we can work out here? And there's some type of agreement that she's going to go back home. Ron's going to go to work. And when he does, she's going to allow them to come inside. Now, I'm not trying to make her look innocent here because she's not, in my opinion, but these individuals would come in at this point and either there was a pre-existing agreement that they were going to take Haley, or while they were there, instead of taking these items that were discussed, they told her, we're taking Haley, and if you say anything, we're going to kill you. Either way, this all comes back to her owing someone money and deciding to come back home on the 9th, not because she wanted to come home to take care of the kids, but she needed Ron to leave the house so that she could fulfill her agreement. That is definitely a plausible theory, in my opinion, and it would explain why there's been such a wide stretch of different versions of this story told, because the reality is everything she said, none of it, or at least most of it, is not true. Another possible theme that's a little far out there, and we don't have a ton to substantiate it other than the history after Haley's disappearance, but again, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior, and that works in reverse as well. The future behavior you have, there's probably some indications of that type of behavior in their past, even though it hadn't been located at that time. So what do I mean by that? All of these themes that I'm talking about right now involve one thing, drugs. And we know, based on their convictions, that Ron and Misty were involved in drug transactions. They were dealing with some pretty nefarious individuals. Is it possible that they owed someone money, or there was a rival gang who was also selling drugs who knew about this house and decided when Ron went to work that they were going to go in there and take what they wanted? And maybe they decided to take Haley in retaliation. Now, why Misty and Ron wouldn't come out and say that, a possible explanation would be that they would have to expose themselves. they would have to let law enforcement know and disclose to them that they were drug dealers, that they were in that trade and they were surrounded by those types of people, and therefore they'd be narking on themselves. And ultimately, maybe they decided it wasn't worth it and they were going to try to get Haley back on their own. And unfortunately, they were unable to do so. Again, there's nothing concrete to link this theory, but when you think about what they were arrested for shortly after, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they were tied up with the wrong people and that maybe while Ron was at work, not knowing this was going to occur, something went down. And it was because of his decisions prior to her disappearance. And speaking of Ron and speaking of drugs, another version of this theory would not be retaliation, but a payoff. This is really hard to believe because most rational people couldn't even comprehend this. But we're not talking about rational people when we cover a lot of these cases. So imagine a world where Ron and Misty, who allegedly both had drug issues, are involved with some bad people, and they get tied up in a situation where they owe a lot of money and they can't pay it back. And if they don't, they're going to kill him. So they decide to work out an agreement. They're going to give Haley up in order to pay off their debt. And to set it up, Ron goes to work, so there's a degree of separation while Misty stays at the house and tells law enforcement that she was quote unquote sleeping. And that's where the conflicting stories come into play later, right? They kind of like half-assed this whole story of what transpired, and they didn't actually do the work to make it align with what they were conveying to law enforcement. The laundry basket being in front of the door, the Hannah Montana t-shirt being there, the cinder block being propped to open the screen door, even though the cinder block was taken from a water tank that more than likely would have needed two people to do so. And then you have Misty telling law enforcement that all the doors and windows were locked and the lights were off. And at first, because she's so dumb, she might be thinking, oh, that's good. I'm separating myself. I'm the good guy here. But if she was really smart, she would have left that opening saying, you know what? I forgot to lock the door. I forgot to shut the window. Because now her theory becomes much more plausible. But she's such an idiot, she didn't think about that until after the fact. And that's when she started adding these different layers, placing Haley on the floor instead of in bed with her, because that was also a problem. Again, how would that happen? How would you not feel or hear anything? So this wasn't well thought out, and when you think about the people involved, it's not much of a surprise. The final theory that I want to mention is kind of a combination of everything that I've just talked about, and it's somewhere in the middle of all of it. What we could be looking at here is something that happened at the home, whether it was an accident or intentional, but something transpired where Haley was hurt or killed. And it could be a situation where Ron went to work, because we know the grandmother came over, and after Ron was already gone, according to the grandmother, Haley was fine. So you have Misty at the home with Ron Jr. and Haley. Maybe she invites people over. Maybe she's by herself, but she's indulging in drugs. And potentially there's some truth in what the witness had said earlier, that Haley got into the drugs, there was an accidental overdose, and she died from that ingestion. And instead of doing the right thing and calling rescue or calling law enforcement, Misty, who only thinks about herself, decided to cover it up. And maybe she called Tommy. Maybe she called him to help assist in getting rid of Haley. And that's when they kind of came up with this whole abduction thing, which was half-baked. So although we don't have any specific evidence to indicate that, I think this theory is just as likely as some of the other scenarios I laid out. What we do know is something bad happened that night. And as law enforcement has said publicly, at the root of all of these scenarios, all of these potential theories, is Misty. There is no doubt in my mind that Misty knows exactly what happened to Haley. And the fact that she hasn't come out and disclosed what occurred leads me to believe that she's directly involved. So the big question becomes, where is Haley? What happened to her? And there's really only two outcomes. The first one being that whatever scenario took place, Haley is no longer with us. And her body was disposed of somewhere where we have been unable to locate her. And there's still a possibility, if we find the right person, we may be able to find her and bring her home. The other scenario, is that she's still alive and out there living her life, and hopefully living in a better condition than she was before. However, I don't lie to you guys, and considering the circumstances and what would have had to have transpired in order for her to be removed from that home, more than likely she's with some unsavory characters. And even though she was 5 years old, I would like to think that she would still remember her previous life to a certain degree and understand that she was removed from that home. And now being 21, if she had the capability of doing so, she would come out publicly and say, "Hey, here I am." And she hasn't done that. Now, that could be because she has chosen not to, because she's been brainwashed and manipulated into believing she's someone that she's not. Or, worst case scenario, she's unable to do so. And that's why it's so important to continue fighting for her and to keep this case alive and to make sure that everyone out there knows the story of Hayley Cummings. There's someone out there other than Misty that knows exactly what happened that night. And regardless of what it was, we need to figure it out, not only for Hayley, but for everybody involved in this case. One way or another, we have to bring this case to a resolution. If that means bringing her home and reuniting her with her family, that's even better. But that's going to rely on you guys, somebody out there from that community who knows exactly what happened. So I'm hoping you're out there right now listening or watching this episode, and this is exactly what you needed to hear to finally come forward. So just to recap, Hayley Cummings was reported missing during the early morning hours of February 10th, 2009 from her home in Satsuma, Florida. At the time of her disappearance, Hayley was 5 years old. She was between 3 feet and 3 foot 3 inches tall and weighed approximately 39 pounds with blonde hair and brown eyes. Hayley has several identifying features. She has a 4-inch round birthmark on her lower left side of her back, along with 2 birthmarks on her face, one on her left cheek and the other along her right jawline. If you have any information in Hayley's case, you're asked to call the Putnam County Sheriff's Office at 1-888-277-8477. There is a $15,000 reward available. My final words, as always, go out to the friends and family of Hayley, although tonight I'm going to do something a little different and not address any of them directly because, frankly, I don't know if they're involved or not. What I will say is that a 5-year-old girl was abducted and potentially killed 17 years ago, and there's more than one person who knows exactly what happened. It's our responsibility to figure out what went down that night. We have to come together as a community to make sure that Hayley's case stays alive, and we assist law enforcement in any way that we can so that the people responsible are held accountable. And I really do hope that I get the opportunity to sit right here and let you know exactly what happened to Hayley and that the people involved are exactly where they belong. And I do want to take a second to talk to Misty directly because apparently she likes talking to the media and she's concerned about public perception. So maybe she'll get this message. Misty, I don't know what your involvement is, but I know that you know exactly what happened to Hayley. In this life or the next, you're going to have to answer for what you did or what you didn't disclose to law enforcement. Do the right thing while you still have time. There's no bringing her back. There's no changing what occurred, but you have the capability to finally give many people in that community the answers that they've been looking for 17 years. Do the right thing. It's not too late. I really hope I get the opportunity to sit right here with all of you and let you know that we finally know what happened to Hayley and the people responsible are being held accountable. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.